The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
When you think of Charles Dickens, you don't necessarily think comedy. You perhaps think of tales of rags and riches and pickpockets and so on. But although the British director Armando Iannucci, the man behind The Thick of It, Veep and The Death of Stalin, among many other things, seems like an unlikely fit for a Charles Dickens adaptation, his upcoming film, The Personal History of David Copperfield, brings his typically inventive approach and draws out the inherent humour of Dickens' writing. I'm delighted to say he's with us today. Armando Iannucci, good morning. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. You've sort of you've taken the words out of my mouth, really. That was my sales pitch for the film, really.
It's been lovely. Thank you for your time. And
thank you.
There we go. Armando Iannucci, ladies and gentlemen. No, it's good to talk to you and thanks for joining us. And I suppose I wouldn't mind, if you don't mind, going straight to you as a boy in one of the great buildings of our time, the local library.
Yes. Where I learned everything.
Tell me about your relationship with the library as a young fellow.
It had everything. I was very lucky that a new library opened up just two blocks down from where we lived in Glasgow, and it was modern and it was really kitted out. First of all my reading I did there. It was great to just go in and, you know, read Charles Dickens and among other things, and Agatha Christie and Graham Greene and that. Mm. It also had a classic music section. It had albums, and so I learned everything about classical music from that. You know, because, you know, things like that are the great thing about libraries is you're not books are expensive. Mm-hmm. CDs and music and albums are expensive. And if you don't know what it is that you're listening to or about to read, you don't want to be spending that money. And just to be able to go in and just try something that looked a bit odd or unusual. And if I liked it, that's great. And if I didn't, I could always bring it back. For me, it was just perfect. So I owe a lot to the local library.
And they're arguably the most democratic institution of our time.
Yes,
because it's
absolutely
free, and you've got the world between, you know, covers there.
Yeah. It's right. It's like everything available to everybody. It's not like when you go in and they say, "And what does your father do?"
Yes.
You know, it's just, you know, there you are. Yeah. You know, it still hurts to read of public libraries closing down.
Sure.
Because, you know, the reading is such an important. It's about getting into the minds of other people, seeing the world from another person's point of view, mm-hmm. I think, which we need, I think, to do more of.
Let's go to the letter D then, and to Dickens and to what he brought to the world. I was thinking last month, watching The Christmas Carol, whether it was The Muppets or Albert Finney, mm-hmm. or whoever it might be, or on stage in the theatre in Dublin, it's still a story that travels. And Dickens travels and travels well, doesn't he?
Yes, and he was looked down upon by other kind of more eminent novelists for being like a public entertainer. He wrote his novels originally in weekly and monthly installments and gave them cliffhangers and suspense and was sort of making the story up as he went along just to boost sales. You know, he wasn't embarrassed by being commercial and being popular because he wanted the masses to read. You know, his books weren't just for a certain section in society. They were for everyone. And therefore, he wasn't afraid to talk about everything. He wasn't afraid to talk about poverty and child labour and, you know, actually uncomfortable subjects for a lot of his readers. And then to use the platform that he'd kind of built for himself to then campaign for reform and for these conditions to be changed. And also we forget he's funny. He's really funny, a funny writer. He writes gags. You know, he describes Uriah Heep, who's this figure who kind of invades your personal space in the book and in the film. David describes him as being so close to you, he's nearer to you than your own shirt. Mm. You know, it's a gag. Mm. It's a one-liner. And he's not afraid to use humour. People kind of see comedy as the lesser form of drama, and I've never seen that. I think it allows you to explore difficult subjects from an unusual perspective, or it allows you to find another way into a difficult subject.
Ed, I'm going to alight on your opening gambit there about people looking down their nose. You will find snobbery at whatever level of whatever intellectual pursuit you're going for.
Absolutely, which is why the book is actually quite contemporary, because it is about, you know, status anxiety and do I fit in and am I in the right, you know, will I be found out, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Am I making the right friends? What are they saying about me behind my back? And will I do well? And am I overthinking this? You know, that sort of, it's about person's search for an identity. David Copperfield throughout the film is trying to work out who the heck he is, really. And then he discovers at the end he's a writer. If he just writes his memories down and turns them into an act of imagination, then that will be, for him, the making of him. It's about that. It's a very modern, kind of almost experimental novel, really.
Well, that's why when I was watching it, the colourblind casting leapt out at me. I mean, Dev Patel, we know from Slumdog Millionaire, among many, many other things. And then other members of the cast, you find yourself going, oh, right, this time. I remember going to see Frozen on Broadway and, you know, the young Elsa was a little white kid and then old Elsa was an African-American actress and so on. And this seems to be the way.
In theatre, this has been the norm for like 10, 15 years.
Sure.
And for some reason, drama gets very literal about it. And, you know, the number of amazing actors here who said, I'm just not going to get a decent part in a costume drama is shocking. And initially, it arose from me thinking the only person I could see playing David Copperfield was Dev Patel. He just inhabited all those, the energy and the warmth and the comic timing, and yet the ability to be kind of strong and charismatic at the same time. He was, for me, David Copperfield. So once I'd made that decision, and once, thankfully, Dev said yes, I then thought, and that's how we should cast all the parts. We just find the right person for the part, find the person, the actor, who has the spirit of that character in them. Mm. And it's a question I've noticed from the press that comes up before people have seen the film,
yes,
and goes away after people have seen the film, because it's no longer an issue once you've seen the film.
Well, that's what it struck me as watching, you know, you watch the program, The Voice, you know, where they, it's like you were casting with your back to the actor, can you act or not? You know what I mean? And then you turn the chair on the basis of the...
Yes, are you the right person for the part, you know? And irrespective of what your background is or what your training is, you know, just can you do it? I want you to walk in the room, and if I think, oh, there's Mrs. Steerforth or there's Aunt Betsy, then there we go.
And would it be too highfalutin a suggestion, Armando, to say that there was a sort of anti-Brexit poke in the middle of all that? Or were you too busy making a film?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. It's not that it's an anti-Brexit message, but what it is anti is the attitude that people might fear that Britain is an insular nation, that it, you know, that it's that's not welcoming, that it's inward looking, and I've never felt that about Britain. You know, I've always felt it's an outgoing, generous, kind, creative country.
Has that changed?
And I don't think it has. My worry is that people think that it's changed.
Okay, perception.
But I think this kind of creativity has always been there and always will be. And therefore, I kind of wanted to celebrate it. And it's a celebration of Britishness, but it's modern Britishness, you know, not just in terms of the cast, but the crew and the talents involved in the design and the production and the locations. And, you know, I think I want us to be comfortable in our own skin when we say that we're from this country.
Can I ask you just to cast a quick glance over the political landscape now, Armando, for a moment, as a huge fan of whether it's Alan Partridge or The Thick of It, particularly The Thick of It. That expression, you couldn't make it up. Has that expression ever been more true? I mean, Boris Johnson is your prime minister. Just felt the need to remind you. And a very
We're in a kind of living satire, isn't it? It's like the entertainers and comedians have become the politicians.
Yes, in Ukraine and in America.
Yes. Donald Trump is a TV entertainer interested in ratings. That's what he's interested in.
But not a fool.
No, he knows how to press all the right buttons. You know, he knows how people work and how they think. So he knows how, he's a salesman. That's what he is. And he's a very good one at selling himself. And I think you make the mistake of thinking he's just an idiot and can be easily fooled. He can't.
I just want to go back to the Theresa May's party conference where the letter started falling off behind her. Now,
yes.
I was just, you don't know where I'm going with this. You know Malcolm Tucker.
No, but this is beyond deleted scenes from the thick of it. I mean, I wouldn't even have put it on the DVD because it would just be kind of hugely kind of incredible.
They would just would have said, where are you going with this? You know, that's not.
Yeah.
And then if you were to put, you know, a particular character in an ill-fitting suit and a white wig and said, that's the Prime Minister. Again, they would have said, Anna Armando, you know, what sort of weekend did you have? I mean, that's just crazy.
Or Dominic
stuff.
Cummings. What's
or Dominic Cummings. He's even more intriguing. Rasputin in the corner, rubbing his hands.
Who wrote him? Who wrote him, Dominic Cummings?
I think society obviously feels the need to fill the vacuum that was left behind by others. Is that what's happening? I mean.
Oh, I'm so sorry if that's the case. It's the reason I'm not doing stuff like the thick of it now is because actually, first, politics is changing every day. You know, it's every day is like more bizarre than the day before. So if you were to try and shoot something that then takes 6 months to make and by the time it goes out, it would be out of date. But also it sort of relies on there being a set of rules that people, if they break them, you show how they break them. But if there are no longer any rules, you can't show them being broken. You know, if Donald Trump says, literally, I can go and shoot a man in the face in the middle of Manhattan and still get elected, then, you know, we've already gone through the looking glass, really. There's nowhere else to go.
And that's why...
Depressing, isn't it?
Well, just a little... I mean, I think of Veep then and Trump, and then we're sitting in this week where the obviously the senator looking at his impeachment hearings, and it's...
Yes.
I mean, they just feel like extraordinary times. And the way you described... Charles Dickens as an episodic writer and people looking down their nose, he was essentially Netflix with a conscience. In the 19th century.
Oh, right, very good. Or HBO with a conscience.
Even better.
Anyway. I mean, he was not averse to doing this kind of serialized narrative. So people have often joked in the past he would be writing it for EastEnders now. But I think he'd be blogging away, certainly.
Yeah, but with a conscience, wouldn't he? I mean, in the sense that there was a satirist in there.
Yeah, well, he understood that he had a platform, that because of his fame, he was in a position to actually, whatever he said was heard by a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so he decided to use that as a platform for trying to encourage change. So that's someone who, you know, you can look at him just as a literary figure, just for the purity of his writing, but also as a personality who used writing for other means as well, not just entertainment, but for changing society, really. He's quite unique.
He would have loved, I suspect, the programme that one of your former colleagues from The Thick of It is show running called Succession, which is...
Yes, amazing show.
Another epic reflection of who we are and where we are. And that's what the world needs, I suppose, is kind of the mirror held up to remind us of our stupidity and fallibility.
It's like a sort of funny but tense American Shakespeare, really, isn't it, Succession?
For sure.
The kind of the power plays, yes. No, it's an amazing show. And fantastic cast.
With the personal history of David Copperfield, Armando, as we draw our conversation to a close this morning, we obviously saw the death of Stalin and feature-length films like this. Is this where you want to be going now? Have you kind of parked your TV days, or do you want to go back?
No, I've got a new show out on HBO that's set in space called Avenue 5.
With Hugh Laurie, of course.
And with Hugh Laurie as the ship's captain.
Yes.
Brackets, or is he? Close brackets.
Thank you for that.
And I kind of want to, you know, I want to do both. You know, I'll move on to season two of Avenue 5, and then I'd love to do another film. I'm enjoying, you know, I did sort of two films back to back, and I enjoyed that. And I love trying to take myself out of my comfort zone, which is what I do with each film. I try and get it into a place that I've never done. So I have never done like a costume drama like David Copperfield before. So it was a kind of good challenge to take on. I think.
Well, to go from 19th century costume drama to deep space five. You know, like it is.
Can you see me running away from the present day as much as possible?
That's, I think, but isn't that what the cinema did in the 40s after the war and the 50s?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
We need distraction now. Before then, you know, it's extraordinary.
You know, the silent movies, the great classic comic silent movies were at the heyday in the 20s and the, you know, through the Depression.
To distract us all from reality.
Absolutely.
You took up the piano in your 40s, and just as we're kind of coming towards the end of January, what is the piece of music you were most proud of learning?
Well, that implies that I am able to play
recognisable
pieces of music. I took up the piano. I love Bach, so I wanted to be able to play the aria from the start of Goldberg Variations, which is simple enough, I think, but it's actually difficult to pull off, as I then discovered.
You can, well, I look forward to hearing you play next time you're in town. Armando, congratulations on the movie and thank you for your time today. It's always good to catch up with you, and we wish you well in all you do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. Armando Iannucci joining us this morning. The Personal History of David Copperfield opens in cinemas around the country this Friday, that's the 24th of January. The text number 51551.